Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Welcome in to another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We're now finally over that brutal loss that stung everybody on Sunday night against the Baltimore Ravens. So now it's going to be turning our full attention to Sunday's game against the Los Angeles Chargers at Arrowhead Stadium. I wanted to break down a little bit on what needs to happen for that bounce back game to occur on Sunday. What do the Chiefs need to do, right? I'm sure everybody's thinking, well, it starts with the defense. And I think right now, number one on that list, if you are Kansas City's defense, is going to be happening in the red zone. How many times can the defense force a field goal in the red zone as opposed to a touchdown? Okay, right now the Chiefs have given up a touchdown on every attempt an opposing team has had in the end or red zone. I believe they're 6-for-6 on Kansas City when they get into the red zone. So you take on that mentality of a bend, don't break defense, the Chargers have virtually no chance of winning this game. If the Chargers get into the red zone four times on Sunday and you force a field goal on two of them, you win that game. We've seen in these last two games with Cleveland and Baltimore what it needed to take to not only beat Kansas City but even give yourself a shot in the fourth quarter. Those teams had to capitalize every single time in the red zone. You cannot settle for field goals against Kansas City. The last team that did that, Buffalo, in the AFC Championship game, they were blown out. So it's now the identity of teams playing Kansas City. You have to go for it on fourth down. You have to get touchdowns because field goals are simply not going to work. You're going to find yourself down by two scores, and then you're scrambling at that point. Los Angeles is another aggressive type of team. What I think goes to an advantage for Kansas City is that even though they have Austin Eckler, he's more of a pass-catching running back. He's not a ground-and-pound running back. So it's going to come down to defending Justin Herbert through the air. The last two teams you faced were heavy running teams. They knew how to get 5, 6, 7 yards a carry. The Chargers can do that when they're going good, but they're going to be throwing the ball almost as much as Kansas City is. So number one on that list, bend, don't break. Have better, doesn't need to be perfect, better red zone defense. Number two on that list, find ways to generate pressure, but generate pressure up the middle. Okay, we know Chris Jones can get to the quarterback on the edge. I would like to see Derek Nnadi and Jaron Reed get to the quarterback or at least flush him out from the interior. Because you think about it, You go up the middle and you start getting pressure up there. That can start to clog the run game. And then you're forcing Herbert to roll out left or right towards the sideline. You could run him directly into Chris Jones or Frank Clark. You get him off his game a little bit. Anytime you're generating pressure on the interior, it's almost impossible for a quarterback to make anything happen. Because you know, you kind of go in knowing that edge rushers are going to get at least a fair share of their pressures. They are going to find a way to get to the quarterback by the end of the game, whether that be in the first quarter or the fourth quarter. The interior guys, though, are mainly there to stop the run, especially in Kansas City. It hasn't happened yet, but Jaron Reed is a guy that can get to the quarterback. We saw it in Seattle. You have that going for you with this defense. Just like any defense, you start getting a lot of heat on the quarterback, they can't make all the reads. They're going to make mistakes instead. And you play into that identity of being the more aggressive team. You're blitzing. And this Chiefs defense is still looking for that identity again. They need to find ways to be more aggressive. They need to force turnovers. I know I just mentioned bend, don't break. Well, yeah, if you get into a spot where they do move down the field, you got to force a field goal. But on the majority of those drives, you got to get to the quarterback. You got to force a turnover. Because against these teams that can score, that's how you beat them. You're not going to force 4 to 5, 6 punts a game. You got to try to find a way to make it a 3rd and 15, 16 situation. And then making a young quarterback try to make something happen and throw an interception. So generate pressure up the middle. Pressure in general is fine. But let's see if the interior can make some noise on Sunday. Number 3 on this list, I'm going to switch into the offense. And it involves Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You have to get him going early. Let him erase the memory. Now, he's a big boy. He's an NFL player. He's likely blocked it out of his mind at this point, the fumble. You can't harp on things that happened days ago, especially in the NFL, because guys will take your spot. Getting him going early on Sunday, though, is the perfect way to get that confidence going, put the Chargers on their heels, and start pretty hot. This does not mean that they need to hand it off 5, 6 times on the opening drive. But using that screenplay, getting him out of the backfield, you know, using some trickery just to get him some touches early on. We know, if you're a football man, we know what happens if you get the run game going, right? Get the run game going, you have to bring down the safeties, then you can go over the top. Right, and nobody probably goes over the top better than this Chiefs offense. If they can't get Clyde Edwards-Helaire going, then you are solely relying on the passing game. That's fine. The Chiefs have won with just their passing game before. They did it in week 1. We all know that how important, though, that running game is. And especially after last week, they got to find ways to run the ball. The best teams are going to be able to pick up first downs on 3rd and short with the running game. Right now, I can't say with confidence they can do that. It's got to be through the air. And Clyde needs this. He needs a good breakout game. The first 2 games have not gone particularly well. Just get him involved. He is a good running back. His guys trust him, and I would expect him to be a big part of the game on Sunday. They're not going to shy away from him because this secondary in Los Angeles, they are pretty good. They've got some fast guys in the secondary and in the linebacking core and up front. This is an all-around a good defense, so he's got to step up if the Chiefs are going to have their best offense on the field on Sunday. The last thing on this list that I have is more of a mentality. We saw it in 2019, towards the last half of the regular season. It really wasn't even there last season. Though they went 14-2 in the regular season, there were a lot of close games, and a lot of close games that there really shouldn't have been. The one that always comes to mind for me is when they were in Miami. I think they led 30-10 at the 3rd quarter, and they had to sweat it out by the very end. So the last thing on this list, number 4 on this list, rediscover the killer instinct. That's what good teams have. They put you away, they step on your throat, and it's over by the 4th quarter when you have a big lead. The Chiefs on Sunday night had the best opportunity to step on Baltimore's throat. They had the ball on their side of the field up by 2 scores. That is a killer instinct takeover. That's when you take the ball, drive down the field, eat 5, 6 minutes of the clock, and you go up three scores. This Chargers offense doesn't need any fuel to be ready to this for this game. You have to make sure in the fourth quarter they don't have a chance to make things interesting. Now, I do believe this is going to be a close game. It's a divisional matchup. You see these teams twice a year. It's a great offense with the Chargers. They have a good defense. Right now, obviously, you give the edge to Kansas City's offense, but they don't have the better defense. So it's going to be a pretty good matchup. On the off chance, though, you play your best game, and let's say you go into late in the third quarter, and you're leading 31-20, and you have the ball. The killer instinct should take over, and you take 5-6 minutes off that clock, go up 38-20, and give the Chargers the ball back, Justin Herbert the ball back, with only 8 minutes to go. You're not winning that game at that point. When the Chiefs get their running game, that's when the real killer instinct can take over, because teams that can't stop the run when they're trailing are going to lose those games. Right now, Kansas City is simply relying on the fact that they have the best quarterback in the NFL. We got to throw the ball, and that can work. But imagine if this team had a scary, doesn't need to be top five in the league, just a competent and productive running game, where on first and 10, when the teams know you're running, you can go get 5-6 yards. That has not been possible since Kareem Hunt was released. It can get there. I think this offensive line can get them to that point. Right now, though, number 3 and 4 on this list kind of go hand in hand with Clyde and this killer instinct. The Chiefs need to rediscover that, because that's when they're at their best, when they can step on teams' throats. I'm predicting them to win on Sunday. We know how good Andy Reid has been against the AFC West. The Chargers, in my eyes, have given the Chiefs the most trouble since Andy Reid took over. But this is a big test for them right now. This is a perfect opportunity to bounce back. Those four keys are going to be paramount in bouncing back for the Chiefs to go 2-1. And like I said, it's a divisional game. These are going to be very important, especially with how strong the AFC West looks early in this season. When we come back here on The Shift, we are going to do a little bit of a breakdown of projecting the Royals' 2022 opening day lineup and their opening day rotation. You've been listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Again, I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. The Royals were rained out yesterday in their series finale against Cleveland. It's been postponed to Monday, where the team will play that game in Cleveland before heading back to Kansas City to play Cleveland again to open up their homestand. They do not play tonight. They go to Detroit, have a three-game series over the weekend. Detroit, you got to give them credit. They have been very impressive this season. Right now, only 4 games under 500. I think if you go back to April, nobody would have believed that the Tigers were going to be fighting for second place in the American League Central. So we're winding up the 2021 regular season. In my eyes, the Royals are going to finish somewhere between 72 to 75 wins, I think, should be. It's an upgrade over what they were in 2018 and 2019. They had that same type of win pace last season in the shortened year. But all things considered, a much better second half for the Kansas City Royals. And that's why I wanted to do this segment today. We can all talk about prospects coming up in September. The reality is the season's coming to an end. The Royals truly aren't playing for much. down this stretch. So let's take a shot in the dark and project what this 2022 opening day lineup will be when the Royals take the field in Cleveland next April. A lot of the same faces are going to still be there. When I have my lineup constructed here, I have only two guys that are brand new to those nine spots on the field. I don't know what's going to happen in the offseason under a new general manager. I certainly didn't expect what they were going to do last offseason. They may go out and make some big trades. They may throw some money places. They may truly believe, after the finish to this second half, that the Royals are a few key pieces away from really competing in their own division or for a wild card spot. So here's my rundown of who I think will be starting an opening day for the Royals in 2022. In right field, and this is... I'm kind of putting these guys in spots. I don't know yet. This is my 1 through 9. I'm just going by position here. So we'll start with catcher. No shock there. It's going to be Salvador Perez. He's had an incredible season so far. He's going to be around for quite some time. Of course, barring injury, knock on wood. He has been hurt before in the offseason. He's been really healthy this year, and I think that's because of that year off from Tommy John. He's gotten to DH a lot. I expect a lot of the same stuff coming from Salvador Perez in 2022. So he will be your catcher on opening day. First base, I have Carlos Santana. Santana has been one of the worst hitters in this lineup since June. You got to keep in mind, he is getting older at this point. He's not going to be the same Carlos Santana that we saw in Cleveland for so many years. Right now, though, he is that stopgap guy until Nick Prado can come up. I don't envision them going out and signing another first baseman. He's under contract. You might as well use him. He's been a healthy, reliable player. He's going to go out there, play first base pretty well. He does still get on base. That's something you can look for right now. He's better. He's a better first base option than you've had the last couple of seasons. I'd expect they're going to let him play out a few months of that contract before they eventually look to deal him or just maybe dump him in general if Nick Prado is really heating up in AAA, and then they'll be able to hand the duties of first base over to Nick Prado. So Carlos Santana is going to be your first baseman. At second base, though he's had a great year at shortstop, I'm going to have Nicky Lopez. Okay, I think he's played Gold Glove defense at shortstop. He's also a Gold Glover at second base. I think you can kind of infer who I'm going to have at shortstop, but Nicky Lopez is now one of the better players on this Royals team. If Salvador Perez was not on this team, Nicky Lopez would... He's having the best season of any Royal right now. It's been incredible to watch this guy who was... didn't make the opening day roster to start the year. If it wasn't for an Adalberto Mondesi injury, Nicky Lopez would have started the year in Omaha. And he's completely taken that job and run with it. He's been one of the best players, top 25 players in baseball. It's been amazing to watch the type of player he's turned into. And we saw this type of player in the minor leagues, but then when he came up, it wasn't really there. He wasn't too good with the bat. He was always known as a contact guy, but he was struggling a little bit with the swing and miss. His defense was still great. That was never in question. He's still not much of a doubles hitter. He's still mainly a singles guy, but now he's a great base runner, excellent fielder, gets on base, good bat control, all around a fantastic player the Royals have in Nicky Lopez. So he's going to be the opening day second baseman in my eyes. At shortstop, and I guess this could be interchangeable with Lopez. If they really want Lopez at shortstop, I don't think they're going to be. They could just shift Bobby Witt Jr. over to second base. I think, though, when you draft a guy second overall as a shortstop, and he's played shortstop in the minor leagues, you are envisioning him to be your future shortstop. And I think that if he is on the opening day roster, he will be playing shortstop. Now, they still may say we want to maybe bounce him around a little bit between third, short, and second. Nicky Lopez is one of the better defenders in baseball, so it's kind of tricky to move him off his spot. I just don't know if Bobby Witt Jr. would be ready to bounce around as much, and I think that he could be and could hold down that shortstop position. We've seen some of the plays he's already made between AA and AAA. Seen what he can do with the bat. He's got 32 home runs and 28 stolen bases between two levels. He's a guy that could be a 30-30 guy. And we all thought after spring training this season, Bobby Witt Jr. would have had a chance to break through to the opening day roster. They wanted to give him more time, obviously, in the minor leagues. He's now done that, proven he's capable, I think, of being a major league player. I think that with a good offseason, good spring training, they're not going to be able to keep him down much longer. If he isn't on the opening day roster, he'll be up in April. That'll be one of those service time moves. I know the Royals say they don't manipulate service time, but there's certain ways you can get an extra year of control, as we all know. Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be on this team by April. I don't think there's much debate in my eyes. If I'm making my prediction, I think this kid's going to be on the opening day roster. So he's at shortstop. At third base, if healthy, I got Adalberto Mondesi. He has played pretty much exclusively at third base since coming off the injured list. He has played a little bit of shortstop, I think it was, and has DH, but mainly played DH and third base. If you have a healthy Adalberto Mondesi, the possibilities are endless for this offense. You get that type of player. You get him for 130, 140 games. Then you really are talking about fighting for a wild card spot. Now, more pieces need to fall in place. Adalberto Mondesi is not going to completely take over and put you in the playoffs. He's a big part of getting you there, though. This Royals team's going to, like I said, finish between 72, 75 wins. If Adalberto Mondesi played a full season, I'm really curious where they would have ended up. Because there were times where, when he was on the field, when healthy, this offense looked pretty good. This defense, offense, all around looked really good. Now, to be an everyday third baseman, I think, yes, you have to be healthy. I mean, I'm not worried about his glove, not worried about his speed. At the plate, he's shown flashes. He's also a big swing and miss guy. It's only hope at this point, though, I guess I would say. Marco, do you... I want to say that Mondesi is an opening day starter.
Yeah.
You can't anymore, though.
No.
You really can't, because every year he looks really good, there's something that pops up. He's been healthy since coming off the injured list for the third time, I think it was. But again, it's got to be a different offseason routine, because the Royals need him, and they need him at third base.
God, it's the conversation you just hate to have when you talk about Mondesi, because you nailed it right there when you describe him and his... I'm going to say it's a short season, because it's been a short season for him, but the things that he's done in the short amount of time when he hasn't been hurt, and the fact that he can play third base as well. Maybe that wasn't the plan at first, but what way that Hunter Dozier was this season, although he's having a way better second half than first, and of course was dealing with an injury, if Mondesi could just stay healthy... You need a consistent third. You need a consistent third baseman. You always feel like you're infield. Those are the guys who are going to be the ones needing to play the most during the season. And if he could just stay healthy, man, that is a really great infield that the Royals could put together for next year's opening day roster. But you're right. And Dayton Morris said it. When you talk about the future of the team and relying on Mondesi, they can't do it anymore, and they got to move on. Not move on from him, but move on from the fact that he's going to be an everyday starter. But the talent's there. There's no question about it, and he's shown it, especially with his glove, just this past month.
And that's the frustrating part about this, is that you can't rely on him to be an everyday starter, but he's got so much talent that you can't bury him on the bench and be a guy that plays 40 games a year. Now, he's already given you 40 games a year because he's hurt all the time. But if they can get 130, 140 games, I know it's a lot to ask for. I'm curious to see what the Royals could do with a healthy and a really productive Mondesi. In left field, now we're going to switch to the outfield. Left field, I got Andrew Benintendi, and he was only sidelined once this year when he had a fractured rib situation from throwing a ball in Oakland. Other than that, I think he's been as advertised of what you wanted when you went out and got Andrew Benintendi. I think that his defense hasn't been a liability as much. I know some analytical numbers will tell you otherwise. His bat, though, has been a serious upgrade, and especially over this last month or so. I mean, he had a road trip where he drove in 13 runs. He's hitting for a little bit of power. I think he's got somewhere between 15 and 17 home runs. Could get 20 by the end of the season. The only thing I'd like to see, but I don't think he's that good of a base runner. I think when the Royals are going great, they've got a lot of guys that can steal bases, play really good defense. Andrew Benintendi, though, is under contract for another year. That will be his make-or-break season where the Royals want to believe, is he a part of our future? He's still a pretty young guy. I think he's only 26. Is he going to be our left fielder of the future? Or does it have to be a guy where they want to bring somebody else in, maybe that has better defense, hits for more power? Right now, though, Andrew Benintendi has been one of the better hitters in this lineup, especially of late. He's going to be there on opening day in left field. Here's my big shock for this team, and it's in center field. And I don't know exactly what it would take. I'd maybe give my guesses here. I think if the Royals are going to make a big trade this offseason, a guy that makes so much sense to do, now it would take a lot, is Cedric Mullins in Baltimore. He is their all-star center fielder. He was their all-star representative. He's been almost a 6-WAR player this year. He's got 5'8", 175, 29 home runs, 302 batting average, 369 on base percentage, 535 slug, 30 stolen bases. He could be a 30-30 guy. He's got 56 RBIs, 36 doubles. A guy that is not being talked about enough. He is not arbitration eligible until 2023. He's not a free agent until 2026. He's going to turn 27 here at the turn of the month, October 1st. That is hands down your center fielder of the future. And when you look at Baltimore, they are nowhere near contention for the next 5 years, in my eyes. Not saying the Royals are much better. Okay, they're further ahead than Baltimore is. Okay, and Cedric Mullins is that top of the lineup guy, that great defender. And right now the Royals have that farm system, top five in baseball, where it could be intriguing to Baltimore to add in some pieces. Now, it is going to take a lot. Okay, it would take 2 to 3 top prospects in this system. I would imagine to get Cedric Mullins, I don't have the top 30 prospects in front of me. I'd imagine Asa Lacy would be a part of that deal if they went out and made this trade. I would think, we all know Bobby Witt Jr. is untouchable. Then you have possibly could send Prado or Melendez. And I know that is a lot to give up. Okay, and it is that would be a crushing blow to the farm system. I just don't, if you have not seen this guy play, this is a future center fielder. This would be the best center fielder you've had since Lorenzo Cain, and he would be your center fielder for a long time. He's a durable guy. He's played in 149 games this season. He's going to have a 30-30 season. He gets on base, he'd be one of your best hitters in this lineup. And it really comes down to, are you willing to part with guys in your system? We all know what the Royals had to do in 2013 to go get James Shields, Wade Davis. They had to part with Will Myers, who was their minor league player of the year. I'm just being honest. If the Royals are going to go out and get a key bat, a key pitcher to this team, you're going to see guys in this farm system that are going to be given away. That's how it goes. I think right now, the only untouchable in this system should be Bobby Witt Jr. I know what we've seen from Nick Prado and Melendez. I would like to say they're untouchable, but you're not going to get a Cedric Mullins if you deal anybody not in that top five. Baltimore needs a lot of guys right now, and they do have a pretty good farm system still, and they want to keep loading up right now because there's not many guys at the major league level they can rely on. Cedric Mullins, though, man, I would love to see him in Kansas City. I know there has been. I follow some fans on Twitter, and I see his name pop up a few times. He would be phenomenal. I think he's one of the better outfielders in the game right now. He's just not being talked enough about because he's in Baltimore. Again, 27 years old, not a free agent until 2026. Going to be a 30-30 guy this year. And then in right field, I know everybody's been waiting for me to say his name. It's going to be Whit Merrifield. I know he can bounce around anywhere in the field. Right now, though, I think if Witt's going to be in this lineup, you have that infield really set. He's going to find a spot on this field. Right field has been one that he has played before. It's been a place that he's played a lot. Unless they were to trade him, I don't see that happening. We've heard this for the last 3 years. Whit Merrifield's going to be in this outfield on opening day, and he's going to be the same Whit Merrifield. Good top of the order hitter. Now you go out and get Cedric Mullins. He's your leadoff guy. Merrifield can then slide down to number two in that order. So with me, and then haven't even gotten to this point, this just because of contract, I think the DH of this team will be Hunter Dozier. They're going to gamble on him having a bounce back offseason. He's more healthy. You're still looking for that 2019 Hunter Dozier. That's why they gave him the contract extension. They want to get back to that Hunter Dozier. His season has been derailed with three different injuries. He's not a good fielder, so that's why I have him at DH. And unless the Royals were going to get a big bat for the DH spot, they're going to keep Hunter Dozier. They're not going to be paying Hunter Dozier. It's not a big contract, but they're not going to be paying him what they are paying him to sit on the bench. So that's my 1-9. I have Merrifield in right field, Nicky Lopez at second, Salvador Perez at catcher, Andrew Benintendi in left, Carlos Santana at first, Bobby Witt Jr. at short, Adalberto Mondesi at third, Hunter Dozier at DH, and Cedric Mullins. Big-time trade, I'm guessing. I'm just having fun with it. Will be my center fielder for the Royals opening day 2022. Before we go to break, I do want to just throw out who I have in my rotation as well. You can't go through the lineup without giving the rotation. Not too much of a change. I actually do think the Royals could go out and get a number one pitcher on this team. I don't know who it would be. I know Greinke is available. I don't know if they could go out and get Greinke. I don't know what Greinke would cost. And he's kind of getting up there in age. He would be a guy that could eat innings. We all know the history Greinke has here. I think he'd be a great addition to bring into this rotation. They need a true number one of this staff right now. You can't have all these young guys and just expect Mike Minor to be the number one. He wasn't even the number one this season. Right now, though, until I kind of get a better idea of who's out there in that free agent market, who I could really see, because when I looked at the list, there wasn't really anybody that I thought, well, that's a good fit. Greinke, I feel like, is going to want to stay on a true a team that he knows signing with is going to be in the postseason. The Royals would be a outside shot of that. So right now, my rotation right now, I got Carlos Hernandez, Brady Singer, Brad Keller, Mike Minor, Chris Bubich. You get two lefties in their rotation. You look to have a better year from Brad Keller. Same thing with Brady Singer. If I'm going opening day starter, though, I really want to give it to Carlos Hernandez. I think Carlos Hernandez has the best stuff in this rotation. It kind of comes down to, do they trust him because he hasn't really been in that spot before? In all honesty, Brady Singer and Brad Keller look like the most likely candidates to be the opening day starter. Maybe more so Brady Singer. Now, I'm going with Carlos Hernandez, though. So those are my five guys in this rotation. I got Carlos Hernandez, Brady Singer, Brad Keller, Mike Minor, Chris Bubich. Not too many changes. I think a few pieces here or there. But I think that would be a pretty interesting Royals team for next season. I'm hoping for a pretty entertaining and exciting offseason, because you want your team, coming off an improved season, to keep adding. You got to keep up with the White Sox in this division. And you got to have a lot better seasons from some of the guys who did not perform in 2021. When we come back here on The Shift, we are going to talk about tonight's game between Houston and Carolina, and also talk about Justin Fields, who will be making his first start in the NFL on Sunday. You listen to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We got Thursday night football tonight between the Carolina Panthers and the Houston Texans. Big storyline tonight, Tyrod Taylor will be out with his hamstring injury, I believe it was, and Davis Mills will be the starting quarterback for the Houston Texans. That one will be in Houston. Carolina started the year 2-0. Got to think they're going to be the big favorite in this one. What I'm actually curious for, okay, Davis Mills is the backup quarterback, right? If he gets hurt, guess who the backup quarterback is to Mills?
Oh, I have no idea.
Is it not Deshaun Watson?
No, I don't think so.
I actually believe that they will have a decision to make, because we know that they do not want to play him, right? And I wonder if they're going to elevate somebody to the practice squad or from the practice squad, because if Mills goes down at any point tonight, and not saying we're not hoping for that at all, but right now, yes, on their depth chart, Deshaun Watson is listed as the backup tonight. So if Davis Mills goes out, we're going to see Deshaun Watson. Unless they're just going to play a non-quarterback. They can do what Denver did last year, but are they really going to... That is interesting. Are they going to risk a loss to not play Deshaun Watson? Or is Deshaun Watson going to play? Right now on their list, they got three quarterbacks listed on their depth chart. Tyrod Taylor's on the IR. It does say right now Deshaun Watson is out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're carrying one quarterback.
Well, my thing is, are they going to list him in? Wasn't he listed as inactive last week?
He was, but it's always been, you know, healthy scratch.
Right. I wonder if they would still be. I wonder if he'd still be a healthy scratch mm-hmm. for tonight's game. They do have a quarterback on their practice squad, Jeff Driscoll, the former Louisiana Tech quarterback.
I haven't seen anything yet on if they've elevated him. They have to. I mean, they're not rolling with just Davis Mills. I mean, you saw Tyrod Taylor get hurt in a non-contact play last week. Can't guarantee your quarterback's going to be completely healthy for four quarters.
So Jeremy Fowler, back on Tuesday, who's an ESPN senior NFL reporter, he said on Twitter the expectation is for the Texans to promote their practice squad quarterback, okay, Jeff Driscoll, to the active roster. So, yeah,
That slipped my news feed, because I saw this and I go, well, it's Carolina at Houston. The only reason I really am interested in this, I picked up Carolina's defense for fantasy. But watching Davis Mills and the Texans, we know the type of train wreck Houston has been. They played really well in week one, and they actually played really well under Tyrod Taylor. But over the last couple of years, it's been pretty much a train wreck. since that divisional game. But
who is Mills? He was the quarterback back at Stanford, right?
Yes, Stanford. I think they drafted him. He was their. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think he was their first draft pick this year.
Right, and he was, because the Texans didn't have a first round pick.
Yep.
You're right. They went quarterback first. So this is what he's going to be going up against tonight in the Panthers defense. First in the NFL in points per game allowed, yards per game allowed, first in the NFL, only averaging 190 yards given up on that Panthers defense. First in the NFL in yards per play allowed, 3.7. And, oh, yeah, they lead the NFL in sacks with 10.
That is not favorable if you are Davis Mills. I mean, I don't know how Carolina's defense not been talked about enough. And now Houston, even though they're playing at home, that is a major disadvantage. Well, I guess my idea of that is now thrown out the window, because if Davis Mills goes down, we're seeing Jeff Driscoll and not Deshaun Watson.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that would have been so interesting to see if they were rolling with Watson as a backup, what the decision would have been. Because if they would have gone with two quarterbacks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's say Davis Mills gets hurt. Would they have gone to Deshaun Watson to win a game, or would they have said, it would have been winner right then and there. They would have said, we're either going to try to win by putting Watson in the game, or we're going to put in a non-quarterback and just completely lose the game on primetime. I guess they don't need to make that decision now, because I don't. If they're elevating Jeff Driscoll to the practice from the practice squad, there is zero chance Deshaun Watson plays a single snap in the NFL this season, if not ever again. That is pretty telling right now, that the Texans have no intention of playing him. We knew that going in to this season.
Mm-hmm.
But unless somebody else was to trade for him, I don't think anybody is. I think it would have happened by now. I think Deshaun Watson might have had his last snap in the NFL. So that's kind of the thing to watch tonight, really, is just, I think this is going to actually not be as close. It won't be the most exciting game. Mainly, it's all for fantasy. If you play fantasy out there, sure, a lot of people have Christian McCaffrey. I don't think a lot of people have a lot of Texans players. Maybe you got Mark Ingram, Brandon Cooks. Former Chief Chris Conley is actually a starting wide receiver for the Texans. So
wow.
You know where Conley is now, but that's kind of the things to watch tonight. I think Carolina is going to win this one pretty comfortably. I think right now they're an 8-point favorite, and that's in Houston again at NRG Stadium. I would love to see Tyrod Taylor in this matchup. He was playing really well. That would actually have been a fun game to watch. I think two evenly matched quarterbacks in Sam Darnold, Tyrod Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, though, you got to think, you just mentioned that defense. This offense for Carolina has a lot of weapons. Like Matt Rhule as a head coach, he's aggressive. This could be one of those boring but also like runaway games early for Carolina, like a 28-10. I don't see how Houston is going to be able to really. I could be wrong. Prove me wrong, Texans, but I don't see Davis Mills in this offense. They were already at a disadvantage this season when they had Tyrod Taylor. And now they're at a severe disadvantage against one of the better defenses of the NFL right now and a backup rookie quarterback in Davis Mills.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, this looks like a Thursday night game matchup-wise. You're right. You wish that Tyrod Taylor could be there, because it sucks for him, because he really felt like this was his opportunity, his chance with the Texans. He felt like he was in a good place as a starting quarterback. It was his team, and now goes down with the injury. It could be over quick for the Texans tonight. If they can't get anything rolling in the first half offensively, it makes for a long evening if you're not only a Houston fan but also just a part of that Houston team overall.
I really hope, last week when we talked about the Giants and Washington, I was not excited for that game, and yeah. I was actually kind of bagging on that game, and I feel bad because that was a fantastic football game. I do hope for the same thing tonight. I mean, I do want Carolina. If it's going to be a good game, make it like 6-3, and Carolina has like three, they force three turnovers because need to win in fantasy this week. So there you have tonight's Thursday night matchup between Carolina and Houston. Houston without their starting quarterback in Tyrod Taylor, And right now, the line on that, 8-point favorite for Carolina. The big news in the NFL yesterday was Justin Fields finally being named the starter in Chicago. They did, Matt Nagy did mention that if Andy Dalton is healthy, he is their starter. I think that's all bluffing. I think that this is now Justin Fields' team. I actually wasn't too impressed with what I saw from him against Cincinnati this last Sunday. Didn't look too comfortable. Still had little flashes of being a really effective dual threat quarterback. I'm just excited to see another rookie quarterback get a shot to play in the NFL. I didn't want to see him play behind Andy Dalton much longer. I feel like this is the better option over Andy Dalton. But now he's got that riding on him. Everybody wanted him to be the starting quarterback. Now he's finally got it. Now it's no more that you got that no pressure of I'm the backup quarterback, and Andy Dalton had all of it because they were booing him when he'd come on the field. They wanted him out. Andy Dalton's now hurt. Justin Fields in as a starting quarterback. What are you expecting this week from the rookie quarterback out of Ohio State against Cleveland, a team that gave Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes a lot of trouble? It's a good defensive front. I think a pretty talented defense. And that's a test. That's a test very early for Justin Fields.
Bears fans, you're getting what you wanted. You're going to be getting your first-round pick starting in an NFL game for your team. And it's a good test, like you mentioned, for Cleveland. Good test for the offensive line, too, for the Bears, who I know have been barred with injuries, but hey, I'm ready for it. Bring on the Justin Fields show. I was impressed with his first showing on Sunday Night Football against Los Angeles. Second half, that was not a game he was being prepared for as a starting quarterback last week. He did throw an interception in that one, but give him a week to prepare. Let's see what happens.
That's the main key right there. Guys that do not prepare to be the starter usually struggle coming in straight from a game. When you are the backup, now he's gotten a full week to be prepared as a starter. We know that he was just announced yesterday, I think it was, to be the starter in this game. It's likely he was told after the game on Sunday that he was likely going to be the starter, get a full week of prep. Tough matchup for him going against Cleveland. That's still a game I really want to watch. Wanted to see Justin Fields be the starter since the offseason. Now I'm definitely going to be tuning in.
Maybe Nagy's play calling will start to make a little bit more sense with a better quarterback in the backfield.
You really hope so. He's got the talent for it. With that, that'll bring us to our favorite segment of the show, of Fact or Fiction. 5 questions, 5 takes in under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
All right, Jack. Fact or Fiction, Royals sign a number one starter this offseason.
We did mention this a little bit in our projection of the opening day lineup and the rotation. I know I didn't have them picking one in my projection. The more I've thought about it after we've gone from that segment, though, I really do think they're going to go after a number one. Whether that be, I know the question is sign. I could see them also trading for one. Mm-hmm. The Royals really need a number one right now. They need, if you're going in the 2013-14 formula, they need a James Shields, a guy that can eat a lot of innings. It's going to cost a lot, or it's going to be teams are going to ask for a few of those prospects you have in your system. The Royals need that number one starter, so I think fact, they are going to go out and get their guy this offseason.
Fact or fiction, Chiefs hold Chargers to under 150 yards rushing.
I really don't want to predict this one, because how can I show confidence in the run defense when there hasn't been any? The only thing I'm thinking about is that the Chargers are going to be passing a lot.
Yeah.
And that's just their offense. They're not going to change their identity in playing the Chiefs. They know that to keep up with Kansas City, they're just going to try to go head-to-head Herbert versus Mahomes. I think actually fact that they're going to hold the Chargers under 150 yards rushing. Austin Eckler is not going to be a guy that's going to run all over you. He's going to be running all over you in the passing game.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know if the Chargers are going to commit that much to the run. So I think fact doesn't mean it's going to be that good. Like, this isn't a benefit. They're going to hold them under 150 yards rushing. I'm still going to go fact with that because the Chargers are going to be throwing the ball over the place.
Fact or fiction, Carolina wins and covers tonight.
This one's pretty easy. I think fact for sure. I think Carolina's not going to have too many struggles tonight against Houston. Their offense has been better under Sam Darnold. They got arguably the best running back in the league in C-Mac. Defense, as you pointed out, has been fantastic. 8-point favorite. I think that's going to be pretty easy to cover. It's going to be a 2, maybe a 3-score win for Carolina. Yeah, I want to tune into this game. Backup quarterbacks, though, just don't really do it for me. So Carolina's going to win and cover tonight.
Fact or fiction, Justin Fields throws for more than 200 yards and wins on Sunday.
This is one of those, the double with it. Mm-hmm. He's got to throw for more than 200 yards and he's got to win. Oof. I'm going to go fiction for the winning part.
Gotcha.
He's not beating Cleveland. That is a really tough test early on in his career. That's a tough first start to have in the NFL. I think he's going to throw for more than 200 yards. That's not what the question is, though. So fiction on that. Justin Fields is going to throw for 200 yards.
Uh-huh.
He's not going to win.
Fact or fiction, Mahomes collects 5 total touchdowns on Sunday.
It'll be a really good Sunday if he does. And we know that he likes to play with a chip on his shoulder, and that loss last week was bad. I'm going to go fact. I think he's going to have an incredible game on Sunday. I could see a rushing touchdown and then maybe like 4 passing, 1 rushing. I think his offense is really going to have a good day. It's a tough gamble because I like Chargers defense. It's just one where this feels like one of those amped up games for Kansas City. They need this one, and they need this one badly. With that, that'll wrap up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Same time tomorrow. You take it easy, Kansas City.